Welcome to Parents' Perspective. And what do you want for Christmas? The smiling Santa asked 4-year-old Ben, who was settling into Santa's ample lap.
Well, Ben began, I'd like that big red fire truck over there, the kind you can really ride in, and the whiz-bang puddle jumper, and a red coaster sled, and a puppy, a black one with white ears, and...
Wait a minute, young fella, Santa chuckled. Don't you want to leave some stuff for the other boys and girls to receive? I do have a lot of children to visit, you know. His eyes twinkled.
It's okay, Santa, Ben reassured him, patting his arm. I'm supposed to have a big list.
Oh, Santa looked at his small visitor quizzically. And why is that, young man?
Because, Ben began patiently, I have more than one holiday to celebrate in my house. I have Christmas and Hanukkah.
From a parent's perspective, what should we know about raising children in an interfaith family? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. We have two guests with us today who have entirely different kinds of experiences with more than one religion in a family. Natalie Merker-Rose is a licensed clinical social worker who has worked in the field of Jewish communal service for over 20 years. As Director of Community Outreach and Education for 9 years at Jewish Family Service in Seattle, Washington, Natalie led numerous workshops and groups each year for interfaith couples, Jewish parents of interfaith couples, and adult children from interfaith families. She has spoken on the topic of intermarriage, outreach, inclusiveness, and Jewish identity at local, regional, and national Jewish gatherings. Natalie raised community awareness about outreach to interfaith couples and unaffiliated Jews, putting these issues on the Jewish community agenda in Seattle through education, programming, and community conferences. Natalie is currently employed at the Jewish Social Service Agency in Rockville, Maryland, where she coordinates a synagogue liaison program. Her views as expressed in this discussion are her personal professional ones, not representing the agency. She is married with 2 children, a freshman in college, and a high school sophomore. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Natalie.
Thank you for having me.
Mary Helene Rosenbaum is Executive Director of the Dovetail Institute for Interfaith Family Resources. She is also a practicing Roman Catholic, a lector in her church for over 20 years, and has been intermarried for more than 41 years. Her husband is a Judaic studies professor with whom she co-authored the book, Celebrating Our Differences, Living 2 Faiths in 1 Marriage. Mary is currently the editor of Dovetail, a journal by and for Jewish Christian families, and also of Shalom, the newspaper of the Central Kentucky Jewish Federation. She has 3 grown children and 4 grandchildren. We're so glad you could join us, Mary.
I'm happy to be here, Linda.
What's the biggest myth about families with more than one religion?
That the children are going to be doomed to confusion and upset. When my husband and I were married in 1962, people were filled with doom and gloom about how upset our children were going to be at us when they grew up. My personal experience has been that that's not the case. And my professional experience with Dovetail, where we work with couples who've made a number of different choices regarding the religious upbringing of their children, is that it depends more on how sure the parents are of what it is they're doing than the actual particular decisions that they make. As one of our associates and friends who's a rabbi and a clinical psychologist has said, your children are not going to be any more screwed up than anybody else's children.
Natalie, do you want to comment?
I think one of the biggest myths is that all interfaith families are alike, and there really is quite a bit of diversity in interfaith families with respect to their practice, their observance, their belief, their being part of a community, all those kinds of things, the dynamics in the family, the dynamics between the parents, dynamics in the extended family. So there really is quite a bit of variation.
Speaking of the extended family, I just read a very interesting article. I believe that it was in one of the Dovetail Institute's newsletters, Mary, mm-hmm. about how grandparents can really mess things up big time for parents who are trying to find their way.
Grandparents can mess things up. Grandparents can also be a resource. And I think, you know, Natalie, I'm sure you'll agree with me that a lot depends on how the situation is presented to the extended family. many times grandparents are afraid they're going to lose you. They're going to lose their children. They're going to lose their grandchildren. And you need to be addressing that level. You know, they may be fussing about particulars, but I think that underlying fear, Lydia Kukoff, who was a writer and a speaker on this subject for many years, said that when she converted to Judaism, her mother said to her, "Does this mean you're not going to be Italian anymore?" you know, aside from the fact that, of course, there are Italian Jews, you know, this reflected this fear that you're becoming other and you're going away from me.
Right. And I would agree. I think that for many parents, it's just really charting new territory. And, you know, as soon as your child is born, you have a vision of their life, including when they get married and the extended family gatherings. And for many families, this is just a different path, and it's all new. And so they can be a wonderful resource. They can be, you know, an added complexity. A lot has to do with the family dynamics, and those dynamics are there about religious issues the same way that they're there about other issues. And so if you have parents who are particularly intrusive, they will probably be intrusive on these issues as well. If you have parents who are more respectful and have better boundaries and are willing to give their kids some latitude about making their own decisions, then probably it will extend to these issues as well, although these are certainly tough issues.
What do you think is the greatest challenge parents in these kinds of families face?
In my experience, the greatest challenge really is separating out religious issues from cultural differences and power issues, other things that are going on. You know, Natalie's talked about the family dynamic. It's hard for people to see sometimes. It's very easy for an interfaith couple to put all the friction into that interfaith box and see that as the cause. And sometimes it's not. Sometimes there are things going on, a prime example being the Christmas tree, you know, that dreaded,
December,
you know, December to tree or not to tree. You know, and it's kind of bizarre, theologically speaking, because Christmas is really not theologically as important a holiday as Easter, for instance. And Hanukkah is certainly not a major holiday, but we've blown them up in this country, and they've become, that's the first issue, I think, 9 out of 10 couples that come to the Dovetail Institute looking for help is, what do we do about Christmas? So one of the things that I try to do is help them sort out what's a religious question and what's about nostalgia and family feeling and general cultural differences. There's nothing Christian about the Christmas tree. You know, it was outlawed in the Massachusetts Bay Colony. You know, there are whole cultures who have, you know, Christian cultures that have nothing to do with trees. So, and when you talk to couples, you find often that it's about connection to childhood or it's about control. And it has to do with how they feel about religion in general, not only each other. One couple that we talked to, at the end of the conversation, the Jewish partner said to his wife, "You can put up the biggest creche set that you want to in the living room because that's your faith, and I respect that. I just don't want that blasted tree." And that's, you know, that was the opposite attitude that many couples will take, but that, you know, that's what worked for them.
I think that there is a big difference, and they often do get tangled up, the religious issues and the family issues, and it really is helpful for people to try and sort those out. These issues are really emotional, very deeply held issues, and it's difficult for people to sort them out. I think we're not taught to do that. Those are not, you know, in the regular course of our education and of our in our lives. These are not questions that we usually grapple with. I remember one man in a group that I led was talking to his wife about why a symbol was particularly important. I used to always do an exercise with symbols because those really are, you know, a Christmas tree is just a tree, but a table is just a piece of wood.
Right.
But a table has come to be known to be used in certain ways as a Christmas tree, as a symbol of other things.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to his wife, "You know, my religion is like an old pair of sneakers in the back of the closet, way covered with other junk." And he said, "I don't use them much, and I don't really care much about them, but don't you dare throw them out." And I turned to him and I said, "You know what? That may be okay for you, but that's not fair to your wife, because she needs to know why those sneakers are important to you. She needs to know why she can't throw them out." And so I think it's helpful to help couples figure those things out so that they can communicate with each other and that they can make some really meaningful choices. I also think one of the greatest challenges is putting the needs of the children first, because these issues cut to your core. It really is very difficult sometimes to separate your own needs from the best interests of the children.
I should put in that I'm not speaking for the Dovetail Institute. My own personal experience is that we practiced both our religions and educated our children in both our religions. And the caveat I would give to the warning I would give to parents who are thinking about that is it's a lot of work. I will say that it's incumbent on the parent whose faith is being practiced to then take an active part in it.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on interfaith families.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Natalie Rose and Mary Rosenbaum about religion in interfaith families.
What are some of the ways that children deal with more than one religion in a family?
I think there's not one answer to that question. I think a lot depends on the child. A lot depends on the family dynamics, the extended family. Children sometimes, where parents are sort of doing both, children are sometimes confused, sometimes feel loyalty issues. Will dad be hurt if I go to mom's services, or I don't want to hurt mom's feelings? I remember a family that I worked with where they had worked out, you know, their decisions and their choices, and they had decided when their children were a few years old that they were going to raise the children as Jews, and the kids were going to Hebrew school. And one day one of the daughters came home and she said, "I'm not going anymore." And they said, "Well, you've been enjoying it." She said, "I'm not going." She just wouldn't talk about it. And that night, the mom was putting her to bed, and she said, "Well, why don't you want to go back to Hebrew school?" And she said, "Mommy, I don't want to hurt your feelings." And the mom said, "But it's fine. I'm fine with it." And she said, "But won't your feelings be hurt if I don't go to the church school? Won't your feelings be hurt?" And the mom had said to me, I was just so surprised by that, because we'd worked it out. You know, we had come to a decision. It depends very much on the child. And both parents have to truly, truly accept the decision and have to really have their whole hearts in the decision, which is a difficult thing to do. And then, of course, there are always extended family members who lobby and, you know, just certainly have vested interests, and children know that. They know, you know, what's important to a grandparent and what's important to a parent. And so sometimes the children feel loyalty issues.
I do agree, particularly about each child being different. And our son William once told us that he was the Jewish hotshot of the second grade because he was the one who got called on to explain Hanukkah and Jewish holidays. Our son Ephraim did not want to be put in that position and felt very private about it and didn't like being singled out as a kid who was different. And I think that children in a small community, children of mixed faith parents, will often feel different no matter what decisions you make on how to raise them, and you have to be sensitive to that. But I think also parents should think of religious education as being like sex education, in that it's what they can handle at the time. It's never one and done. You know, you don't explain it to them when they're three and you never have to talk about it again. These questions are going to keep coming up, and you're going to be dealing with them on a more and more sophisticated level as the children get older. And that's something that parents should be prepared for and not afraid of. We were recently driving our grandchildren to school, and we were talking about their being raised in as religious independence. They're not affiliated with any religious institution, though they're going to a Catholic school. And they consider themselves half Jewish, and the math doesn't quite work out there, but we don't argue with them about it. They're very interested in Grandpa Ned's religious practices. And we were talking about Purim and how this is a holiday that we celebrate because Grandpa Ned is Jewish. So the 7-year-old said, "Well, what are you?" And I said, "I'm Catholic." And the 6-year-old said, "What are we?" And I said, "Well, you're children, and you're going to be thinking about these things and making your decisions as you get older and deciding what you think about the world and God and your relationship." And she sat back with this very satisfied smile on her face and said, "When I grow up, I'm going to be SpongeBob."
Well, and I think, you know, I think basically that's the question that children want to know. Who am I, and how do I fit in here, and what am I?
If you're clear on the answer when they're little, they're going to be able to accept that. Our older son said to us when he was in his 20s that he thought the reason that he wasn't confused and didn't feel torn between us, or that he had to declare loyalty to one or the other, was because each of us was so sure of who we were. And that made them feel confident that they could be who they were and they weren't going to be upsetting us or undermining us. I always tell couples, it is easier to be a Christian married to a Jew than it is to be a Jew married to a Christian. And I think Jewish-Christian couples have to be very sensitive to this. When we sit down to a meal, if we say a Jewish grace, if we say, "Blessed art thou, Lord our God, who brings forth bread from the earth," everybody at the table can say amen to that. Yeah. If I say the grace I was raised with, which ends through Jesus Christ our Lord, bam, we've got a big division. I think as Americans, we always want to feel that everything can be compromised 50-50, and there are some things that can't be. And I think some Christians, especially who haven't had a lot of contact with Jews, are kind of puzzled by this and really don't get why, for instance, it's not the same thing to have a crucifix on the wall as it is to have a menorah on the shelf, and why these Christian symbols don't fill their Jewish partner with warm, fuzzy feelings. Being Jewish is more than assent to a particular creed. You know, there's a whole complex of ethnic and cultural and traditional and historical identity that goes often into being Jewish. I mean, it's not universally true, but it's generally true. Whereas for most Christians, being Christian is about believing in Christ.
I think for some children, giving them the choice of religion is a difficult thing. My opinion is that those choices really are adult choices. And so there are some children who are very burdened by those choices. There are some children who want to make those choices and who feel perfectly fine making those choices. Mm-hmm. You don't always know how your children will react to that. For some families who say they're doing both, as you mentioned, both means not doing very much of either. Mm-hmm. And so often those children come out feeling like imposters. And they say, you know, I feel like a Christian when I go to synagogue and I feel like a Jew when I go to church. I don't feel authentic. I don't have the tools. I don't know the rituals. I don't feel part of the community. I don't feel like I belong anywhere.
What would you tell the parents of those children?
You know, in my opinion, making a choice of religion is a parent's responsibility. And to think that my children, because they have two Jewish parents, will choose to be Jewish when they get older, mm-hmm. as an absolute ironclad guarantee is silly. When they become adults, they will make those choices for themselves. And I think our job as parents is to model and teach a life that we feel is meaningful. And it's helpful for kids to make that choice because then it takes all of the burden off of them. Mm-hmm. And I think exposure is very different than identity. And so I don't think we should not expose our children. Exposure is a wonderful thing. And certainly when you have two parents who are of different faiths, you have built-in opportunities and you have extended family and you have extended family gatherings and rituals and rites of passage that are all wonderful learning opportunities. But you also have, I think, a responsibility to make the decision for your child that you may have a parent who is one religion and another parent who's another religion, but you are blank. And I think it just relieves the child of a lot of potential loyalty issues, confusion, the burden of making a choice at that young age. Certainly, exposure to the different faiths and more is a wonderful thing, and it teaches respect and acceptance and you know, the beauty of diversity in life.
My only disagreement there is that I don't think that choosing one faith and you know, giving that label to the child, which I agree can be very comforting to a child, is necessarily going to remove those feelings that you're talking about. My father was a Lutheran. And when my Catholic mother married him in 1939, it was, you know, just as scandalous as when I married Ned in 1962. In the terms of their marriage, my sister and I were raised Catholic. That was our identity. That was our training. That was our education. But that did not mean that we didn't feel different from the other kids. It didn't mean that we didn't feel a pull and a conflict with the fact that we were a different religion from our father. I guess I'm just saying that parents who choose one religious identity for their children should be aware that that's not going to mm-hmm. solve everything. They still need to deal with these issues, mm-hmm. and they still need to be sure that they're not marginalizing one parent. Our youngest son wrote an article for the Dovetail Journal once about called Confessions of an Interfaith Child. He, on this question of Hanukkah and Christmas, he said when he was little, all his friends envied him because he had both Hanukkah and Christmas. And it wasn't until he was an adolescent that he realized it was a zero-sum game and we were only going to spend so much money, even if he said he could convince us to celebrate Ramadan and the vernal equinox. He was getting the same number of presents for twice the amount of religious activity. He said it was a cruel right. awakening.
Right. Right.
And there, I think that's an important thing, is to kind of keep a sense of humor about the right. less weighty matters.
Right. And I do agree with you. Those issues do not go away. If the family does choose to have the children practice one of the religions of the parents and not the other, it's very important, and I always strongly encourage the parent whose religion is not that was chosen, to figure out other ways in which you are going to connect with your child. And so if religion and culture is very prominent in the family, figuring out other kinds of ways that they can have some special bond with that child, because certainly we don't want to damage that relationship or the relationship between the children and the grandparent.
And we had a set of grandparents at one of our conferences, Jewish grandparents, whose grandchildren were being raised Christian. And the grandfather was very upset because his little granddaughter had said a Christian grace at a meal that they had together. And he said, next time I'm going to say, you can't say that prayer under my roof. There was a Jewish social worker and a rabbi and his wife and my husband and me. And we all sort of focused on this guy and said, you know, that's probably not the most useful way to approach this situation. How about, for instance, if you said, let me teach you my prayer? You know, instead of saying your prayer is bad and wrong, you know, and setting up this terrible conflict for the child, try and put the positive spin on it.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on interfaith families.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $10 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We're talking with Natalie Rose and Mary Rosenbaum about religion in interfaith families.
One of the things that we talked about just briefly was the role of grandparents and extended family. Maybe we should talk about that for a minute, just as how they can be resources and how they can be supportive.
The late Egon Mayer, sociologist and pioneer in interfaith studies, said something I thought was very wise. He said, when you're thinking about your own parents and their interactions with your children, remember you didn't make the same religious choices that your parents wanted you to make either. So you shouldn't be forcing your religious choices on them any more than you want them to force theirs on you. And then to the grandparents, he said, remember that you can be the model for your faith, for your grandchildren. You can be their connection to Judaism. Here again, you know, the parents need to be careful about making sure the boundaries are clear. We all know of cases in which the grandparents have gotten very intrusive. If you just make it clear, if you say, for instance, if this is the case, it's all right for you to give the children Christmas presents, but it's not all right for you to give them crucifixes. Then you can use the grandparents to be models and to show your children what you want to share with them about your heritage.
I think grandparents can be a wonderful resource, and teaching religion and transmitting values is more than the job of just the parents. It really does take a village, whatever your village may be, and that's why being part of a community is so wonderful as well. But grandparents can certainly fill that role, and certainly at certain ages, children are much more likely to be influenced by people other than their parents.
What resources would you suggest for our listeners who want to pursue some of these issues further?
There are two wonderful websites that I'd recommend. Interfaithfamily.com mm-hmm. is just an incredible gem of a resource. There are articles on there written by people in interfaith marriages, children from interfaith families, professionals in the field, always with resources as well on that website. And you can just go on interfaithfamily.com and subscribe. The other website is the Jewish Outreach Institute website, and that's joi.org. And that, again, will list numerous resources and articles. Locally, the Jewish Family Service Agencies and the Jewish Community Centers offer workshops and groups. In terms of books, my all-time favorites are still Mixed Blessings by Paul and Rachel Cowan, Mixed Matches, which is by Joel Krohn.
Yes.
and Intermarriage Handbook by Petzank and Remsen, which has lots of exercises, some of which I've adapted for use in groups, but which couples can do by themselves.
I think those are all excellent resources, and I would add along in that vein the Jewish Guide to Interfaith Family Life by the same people who run interfaithfamily.com.
I wanted to add one resource for grandparents, Jewish grandparents, and that is Mingled Roots. It was published by B'nai B'rith. It's gone in and out of publication, but it's a wonderful resource and actually the only one that I know of for grandparents.
Yes, the author is Suni Levin, and that's available through Dovetail, by the way.
Oh, good.
And our website is dovetailinstitute.org. We have a number of books, including the Jewish Guide to Interfaith Family Life, available, and our regular journal, which is published every other month online. We have a listserv. And we're going to be having our national conference. And our aim at these conferences is to incorporate people from as many perspectives on interfaith life as we possibly can. So no matter what you're thinking of in terms of raising children, or if you're an engaged couple or grandparents, there should be something for you to relate to there.
How fortunate we are that both Natalie Rose and Mary Rosenbaum were available to be with us to talk about some of these many issues today when a family has members from more than one religion, and that's such a common issue. Thank you both so much for your wonderfully helpful insights.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of Mary Helene and Stanley Ned Rosenbaum's book, Celebrating Our Differences, Living Two Faiths in One Marriage. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show number 275. Tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into.
To learn more about Parents Perspective and our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. This is Sandy Bird and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. At the end of our program, we often thank individuals or foundations for their generous donations that help with the cost of producing Parents Perspective programs. Parents Perspective is a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. Today, it is our turn to thank you, our listeners, for your tax-deductible contributions to our annual fundraising campaign. Please send checks or money orders to Parents Perspective Incorporated, Post Office Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015. Thank you for helping us to continue to work for you. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.